Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to talk about concrete CMS. What? Another CMS? Why? We'll have to find out. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 239, recorded January 23rd, 2013. Concrete CMS. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing to you each week the big projects, the little projects, the projects you might not have ever heard of, the movers, the shakers, the important people, the little people, the people that contribute to everything, the people that contribute to a few important things. Let's see, how many more categories could I come up with there in my random opening monologue there? Now, let's just go right into the idea that I have a co-host. What? That's not just an idea, that's for reality. Simon Phipps, welcome back to the show.
It's my pleasure to be back again, Randall. And may I say how slim you're looking?
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. We'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the show. I don't actually have any of that opening scripted. It just always comes to me in my head, and sometimes it comes sideways in my head. And so I apologize if that just sounded like one of the worst openings we had for the show. I do want to say before we start, well, let's talk about our guest first. Our guest today is, hope I get this pronounced right, is disappeared from my screen. My guest is Franz Maruna, and he is going to represent for us the Concrete CMS. Now, I know we've had CMSs on this show before, I think about 7 of them. We've got one coming up in a few weeks. Content management systems basically allow you to build websites through the browser. So rather than doing what I sort of do as a programmer, where I take HTML files and construct them carefully and upload them to a website and build out the database structures behind those and all that stuff, this is more like you get a page and you say, add a new page, and you're doing it through the web and you add the content for the page right there through your browser. So there's been a lot of these out there. In fact, the marketplace is huge in this in terms of the number of CMSs that are out there. So we'll have to get Franz to talk a little bit about why Concrete is different. Why would I use this instead of something else? So we'll have to get to that. Let's see. Simon, what do you know about Concrete?
I really hadn't noticed it before. It looks like it's in the same school as other projects like Silverstripe. So I'm going to be interested to dig into it. I notice it's MIT licensed, which is really quite unusual for CMSs. They tend to be GPL licensed. So I'll be interested to find out why that is and what that's done to their community.
Great, great. And again, just before I get going here, I do want to thank my client for letting me take a little bit of time on early Wednesdays here to actually come out and tape Floss Weekly. I'm on the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes building, just north of LAX. So if you're curious about my current location, there's no windows here, so I can't really show you what the scene looks like. Oh, it's a nice, beautiful, sunny day, as it always is here in LA, except when it rains. So there we go. So let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Franz Maruna. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Franz, but close enough.
Franz Maruna. Okay, good. It's more of a German pronunciation then. I should have known that from the spellings. Okay, so where are you speaking to us from?
Portland, Oregon. Sunny, wonderful Portland, Oregon.
Oh my God, my hometown. So this is really weird. I live up there, but I work down here in California. So I'll be back home actually in about 3 weeks for a whole 48 hours. Before I head back out again. Yes, yes.
Well, if you're ever down in Warehouse District, stop by and have a beer.
Oh, very good, very good. Yes, I know exactly where the beers are in the Warehouse District of all things. Yes, of course, Bridgeport and those guys right there nearby.
Yeah, they're across the river. We're on the east side. But
East Warehouse District. Okay.
Yeah, the beers here are right there. So
okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, great. So at the beginning of the show, I gave sort of the 30,000-foot view of what I believe Concrete CMS to be about. But let's go ahead and hear it from you. What problem does Concrete CMS solve?
Well, we are a content management system that is really designed to serve the relationship between site developers and site owners. We built it back in, I guess our first version was in 2003. And we were just a full-service interactive media shop, and we had had a lot of experience working on large enterprise CMSs like TeamSite, and also we had been doing Mambo work for kind of smaller government projects, and we just found that all of the tools seem to be really geared towards one side of the equation or the other. My experience has been people who end up running the websites are rarely the people who end up building them. So it's a lot like building a home. You're going to have to hire people who are experts at doing something, and then you're going to be stuck with the results. And we just didn't see a really great solution for making that home flexible over time. You'd have to hire the original people who built it, even if you wanted to just change a light plate cover or a faucet years later. So we really wanted to develop something that was easy for anyone to pick up without training. We were tired of having to go in and train new people when they came into an organization we had worked with. But we wanted to have something that was great for developers too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is really just geared for site owners, but the code that it makes is a step away from trash. We knew that sites developed organically, and so we wanted to have a great framework that was object-oriented that developers could be proud and happy to work with, but anyone could easily edit. And that's what we've done, and that's really, I think, what makes Concrete 5 unique is constantly being aware of that balance between the developers who need things to be really well-built from the bottom up and the site owners who just need it to gracefully work.
So I would contrast this probably with other well-known content management systems. Like, would you say WordPress would be an example of that?
Sure. Yeah, I think WordPress is a fantastic blog. We still use it for blogging ourselves. It does a really good job because it is geared out of the box to be a blog. And so that lets you really excel in saying, look, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do this well. We're not really going to worry about these problems over here. I think we've all started with a WordPress site and then realized, boy, this is really not going to turn into a particularly powerful intranet for our organization. While a wonderful blogging tool, I don't think it's really I imagine if you talk to the WordPress guys as well, I think they would say we're in the media business and it's cool that you guys are using this as a CMS, but really where their heads are at is blogging. It is easy for anyone to pick up, so that's really compelling. I think you'll see things on the other side of the equation as well. I mean, I think Drupal is a fantastic framework for building really powerful sites, but it doesn't bode well when it takes a week to install it and different shops have to use different modules to just get a baseline that they all enjoy using. That's not something my mom is going to do late at night and like the results on her own. So again, both very useful tools, but kind of on opposite ends of a spectrum that we try to be right in the middle of.
Oh, good. So that defines good the boundary. I was trying to figure out sort of what this is towards and what it's away from, and you just did that very well for me. So thank you. I've looked at trying to do a Drupal install because I wanted to have a complex website and stuff, and so I really appreciate this. How do you think you've been able to achieve this balance between something that is really good for programmers versus really good for just getting something up and running?
Oh, it's a combination of things, I guess. I think the first off is just being aware that is the problem that we're solving. I think a lot of times if you just put your engineering cap on, it's easy to say, well, look, there's a form. You can change content. Done. And I don't know. My experience has been if people don't want to use it, if they're not excited about it, then while perhaps you met the requirements and you're going to get paid, you didn't meet the underlying expectations. So just kind of personal experience about that of, look, I don't just want to be done. I want people to be happy. I think just questioning everything that you do and not being afraid to undo things and go back and realize, look, that was a fun idea, but not the best one. I think our own experience helps a lot. My CTO, Andy, who is still emerging, has an English degree, not a CS degree. I grew up programming computers. My dad ran a manufacturing software shop, but I was mostly interested in photography. And so just trying to really embrace the liberal arts approach to life and muster empathy for everyone's problem and understand, look, there's a lot of it's very easy in this industry for people to kind of dismiss one another. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. And, most people have perspective that you don't. So it's worth your while to kind of think about, well, sure, it's easy for me to understand, but why is it perhaps hard for someone else? And let's just keep revisiting that. So yeah, I think you just see it in all the little decisions that we make. Our marketplace is got some fundamental differences in just the approach. So from the code up to kind of our business, we try to keep that balance.
You know, I'm just looking now at the Wikipedia page for content management systems, and there's like, not, I thought there was maybe a dozen, but it looks like there's hundreds down there. So why, what distinguishes Concrete from the rest of those?
Oh, I mean, there's thousands of content management systems out there because I think every small web shop starts building their own tools, right? There's a developer. As you get older, you realize why reinvent the wheel. But when you're younger, it's like, well, because I can. Mm-hmm. So I think an awful lot of shops have built their own tools and either sold them or released them and in some way. And sometimes they are sticky and sometimes they aren't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess we've got good code and good ideas and we put ourselves out there. And it's probably a combination of a dozen different factors.
Okay. And just to also identify one other realm of what this is about. When I'm doing my website development, I'm a programmer, so I look at it from building a bunch of, in my case, Perl template toolkit stuff, and then uploading it via SSH or Git or something to a server. But a content management system doesn't work that way. You work directly with the website. Can you describe more about how that works?
Yeah. Concrete 5 is a middleware-based content management system. So we're written in PHP, although Perl is very fine as well.
Thank you.
All of your content is in a database. So we've separated content from design. If you look in the database, you're going to see a whole lot of flat content, with some inline HTML, but often just with pointers towards images and things that are all cross-referenced in the database. All of the assets for your site are going to live in the file system. So if you've got images or PDFs or whatever, you would upload those through the CMS, and those exist in the file system. And then the presentation for your website, the templates or themes or whatever you want to call them, those are going to be files on your server. So you would still FTP or SSH or whatever you want to do to get those up there. And then Concrete 5 or WordPress or Drupal or any of our middleware-based competition, when you request a page, it looks at whatever ID you're passing. It says, oh, I need to get this content from the database and wrap it in this theme, and bloop, here's mm-hmm. a web page.
And how well does it work for something like theming? I mean, can I build a bunch of pages then decide all of a sudden, no, I really want them to look some other way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With Concrete 5, we every page is a page type and a theme. So page type can kind of map to form factor or object model. So, out of the box, we have page types like left column, right column, full page width. But you can also do things like product page or blog post. And you can attach custom attributes to those page types so they can turn more into a basic CRUD interface. But that page type defines which file to look for in the theme directory. And the files in the theme directories are basically HTML. They end in PHP because they've got a couple of lines of PHP, but, mm-hmm. there's literally a line at the top to include our in-context editing bar, and then mm-hmm. everywhere you want an editable area on the page, there's a line or two of PHP you put in there. It says, look, I want someone to be able to add blocks of content or functionality here. And so your code really dictates the presentation layer. So if you want to have tables and font tags and, more power to you. We're not a coding framework in that sense.
So you said just a moment ago that all sorts of small web shops have got their own CMS. Is that where this came from? Is this your business that's created this CMS, or has it come from somewhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. We in 2003, we had an opportunity to do a gig for the Ad Council. And I don't know if you guys have any experience with the Ad Council. It's like a nonprofit association of advertising agencies that give away their time to kind of regain their soul. And, these are the folks that are responsible for the infamous this is your brain on drugs commercial. They had a Lewis and Clark Bicentennial website that they were building. And Lewis and Clark's kind of a big deal out here in Oregon. And, they had just sit on the project for a year because everyone was volunteering their time. So by the time we got involved, they had about 2.5 months left. They had already bought national TV spots that couldn't move, and their information architecture amounted to a 2-page PowerPoint deck that had, awesome bullets like, there should be a calendar. You should be able to follow the trail. And we were young and full of energy and said, yeah, sure, we can help you, and immediately realized there was no way we could really get them to agree on any fixed requirements. We would get on conference calls, and there would be 80 different people on the call all arguing for things to be arranged the way it made sense to them. And we just knew, look, the only way we're going to launch anything is you know, just by having something and waiting it out. And my experience with kind of really tech-driven projects is you really need to be pretty tight with requirements. And look, there's sign-off, and then if you change these things, like, not only does that mean more work, but that just means more time, and we can't do that. It's just impossible with this group. So we sat down and said, we're going to have to architect something different than what we've been playing with, and went to a bar and figured out Concrete 5. At that point, it was actually called Concrete CMS. And you know, our basic premise was we want to have in-context editing from the bottom up. No one was really doing that back in 2003 particularly well. But you know, we had just spent too much time sitting through these meetings of, if you want to change this page, you have to go to this form over here, and seeing people who are not comfortable with technology frantically writing notes and realizing, oh my God, you know, we've given them a product they're scared of. If you can just go to a page and see a typo, click edit and fix the typo, that just makes so much more sense. I mean, that's how your word processor works. That's kind of how your website should work. That just seemed like an obvious play. So we did that, and then we knew we were going to have some way of moving functionality around through different pages. That we were going to be on calls where they're saying, look, you know, now we want the calendar over here. Or maybe it should be on its own page. And we wanted to be able to literally do that during the call, like, you know, be able to bang that out while they were arguing about it and have everyone be impressed and go away. So those were kind of the key things that we sat down and said, look, you know, we just need a framework that we can do that in. We built that, and site went up. They were able to handle their national TV spots, and I think they were getting about 10,000 users a second. And we then just took the next 5 years and tried out different ideas, sold it to whoever came our way. We built the Kettle Chips website with it, did some work for the National Guard. We ended up, by 2007, we were mostly working for startups that were trying to build online communities. This was back before Facebook was public's the wrong word, but you still had to be in college to use Facebook, and everyone was excited about MySpace, which was just horrible. And so there's all sorts of angel investors trying to make MySpace for moms, or, you know, MySpace for this vertical market or for that vertical market. And we had, by this point, we had built a fair amount of bones for building good online communities inside of Concrete CMS. We had a nice way of dealing with permissions and users, and not a lot of stuff kind of shrink-wrapped, but all the tools that we needed. And so we were working for big startups doing that. And 2008 came along, and you know, we had half a dozen clients, all of which were going to get Series B or D or whatever funding. And then, of course, no, maybe we're not. And, you know, gee, we're going to spend maybe half the money we thought we would, or, you know, maybe just a half of that again. And I realized, well, no, you're not. And I have kids. meanwhile, Andy, my CTO, I've been working with for, I don't know, 15 years, we would just send him to his basement every so often and say, look, throw out the bad ideas, keep the good ones, and rebuild it. And we had the wonderful luxury of being commercial. I mean, it was open source in the sense that you guys are going to hate, in that if you bought it, it was your copy, and there was nothing compiled. So, you know, it's better than Microsoft Word. But
yeah, that's not open source, unfortunately. But well, you are now. Yeah. So how, you know, I see that now you're under the MIT license. Yes. And that's pretty unusual for CMSs. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and most of them are there under the GPL or AGPL. So, you know, when did you go really open source, and why did you pick the MIT license rather than GPL, which is a much more obvious license for a small business to release their CMS under?
Sure. By 2008, we realized you know, we weren't going to put the money into marketing this thing in a traditional software way, and our clients were drying up anyways. And we had this awesome new version that we had built in the basement. So what are we going to do with it? And you know, we thought it was time to give back. We had certainly taken advantage of open source a lot in our lives. We were dependent on it, and we wanted to do something bigger than just being well-paid web developers. It kind of felt like like I was a plumber or a lawyer. I dropped out of college because I thought we were making the printing press of the future, and you know, here I was getting paid by the hour to fix forms for people. So I mean, there was a definite sense of, look, we want to make the world a better place, and we're not really doing that with this business the way it is. So we decided we want to go open source, and then we came to the GPL MIT license. And from our perspective at the time, we just wanted to give it away. We wanted to be as free could be. And in my mind, I don't. I'm more interested in freedom than free in, as in cost. If someone is more clever than I and can figure out how to make money with Concrete 5 in a way that I can't, more power to you. To me, that's a level of freedom I wouldn't want to curtail. I guess we had spent so much time being commercial and doing that and seeing the advantages of that. We said, well, look, you know, if we're not going to do that, let's really go the other direction. Don't sue me. Beyond that, enjoy. And that's how the MIT looks to us. So, and I know a lot of people do that.
How's that worked out for you in terms of community? Because again, I've looked at Olo at your statistics, and Andrew Embler seems to be your main contributor on the code base. How big would you say this community was? And is it all your people, or are there people from outside your company who are contributing?
Well, Andrew Embler is our CTO, and yeah, he has absolutely written 98% of Concrete 5. Our community is large. I mean, we have 140,000 people at concrete5.org that are all using Concrete in their own way. What I would absolutely agree with is we are not run by the community. The community is using Concrete 5 to solve problems in their own way. So the types of patches that we get are often very granular. And that's what we're looking for. We're not really looking for someone to come along, volunteer their time, and rethink something that is major and in the core. We're happy to get feedback. We're happy to have transparent discussions about, you know, what should we be doing next. But my experience has always been that, you know, three guys in a room can figure out some really brilliant stuff. It's hard for me to understand how 100,000 people who aren't in the same room are going to compete. You know, the analogy that I make a lot is for us, and again, you know, different strokes for different folks, open source is a lot like a great Thanksgiving dinner. You can have as many people over as you want. Where you really excel is when you say, look, bring your own side dish. Here is a box that you can work within that you're not going to damage anyone else's side dish. You're not going to mess up the turkey. You know, there are some restrictions. Please, if you're going to bring chicken, cook it. You know, don't get anyone sick. But here's an opportunity for you and your two buddies to be super creative and, you know, think outside of this box a little bit that we're making for you, go solve the problem in your own way. That I think is what you have to do, you know, make an ecosystem where people can, where there is that opportunity for a meritocracy, rather than saying, let's have 30 people come over and argue about how to cook a turkey.
Right, so you'd, by the sound of it, you consider the word community to describe more your users rather than code developers. I mean, I'm looking on GitHub.
Oh, you're breaking up on me.
Oh, that's Simon holding a pose there. I think I have a couple questions while we're waiting to get Simon back. So what concerns me, given that there aren't a lot of core contributors except maybe Andrew, is... you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but what if he gets hit by a bus? Is there enough other documentation in the code base, enough of the people that really understand every line of the code base that this can continue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the code base is well documented. There are hundreds of thousands of people using Concrete for their own purposes. So, this is the MIT versus GPL. So people can go take Concrete 5, rebrand it, my web shop's awesome inline CMS, and run with it. And they frequently do. So,
people have made their own sort of layering on it, actually making changes to the core. They're just not contributing that back to the actual core. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, sometimes they do. Sometimes we accept it. Sometimes we don't. But sometimes for a business purpose, someone will say, look, I don't want my clients, you know, thinking that we're just taking someone else's tool and building them a site with it. So we're going to add our own support layer and put some new blocks in it and call it Cement 6. And that doesn't bother me. I think that the answer to the question of what happens if Andrew gets hit by a bus, I mean, well, what happens if Linus gets hit by a bus? What happens if Matt at WordPress gets hit by a bus? I mean, any project, no matter how community-based you want to call it, has leaders, and those leaders are important.
I agree that the leaders are important, but Linus contributes the least number of patches to the kernel now. I mean, he's got all his lieutenants that all understand their areas and all the dozens, hundreds of contributions coming up through that channel. So it isn't like Linus is personally writing most of the code. And I got the impression a moment ago that you said Andrew is writing most of the code. So I'm wondering how much other shared knowledge there is in that level of code. Can other people pick up where he left off relatively easily?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have any problem in this horrible scenario of people figuring out what Andy has written. I mean, let's be honest. This is PHP. We're not, you know, no one's building a Google here. So, you know, people are dependent on it. They're using it for their own stuff. You know, obviously, I think you cut the head off of any organization, and who knows how it's gonna end up. You know, I think the advantage that you get is, we can put stuff on a whiteboard, look at it, and say, well, that's a really interesting but horrible idea, and so we're able to kind of do things. We're able to bang out big ideas pretty quickly, and that works for us.
Okay, so let me talk a little bit about installation and technical questions. So what browsers is this compatible with? Because you've got all these WYSIWYG editors. What's the minimum standard for browsers?
Anything works pretty well. We don't really support anything IE-based before. I mean, you can get around in IE7, but it'd be nice if you upgraded. But beyond that, it's perfectly fine and major browsers. Opera will work, Chrome, Safari, all your Firefox, certainly.
Okay, and what would be like a minimum installation requirement be? Could I actually like grab a small EC2 instance and put this on that?
Sure. Yeah, it's PHP, MySQL. You can run it on Apache or IIS. It's pretty easy to install. It's certainly nice to have a server with some decent resources on it. If you go set up something on GoDaddy, it's going to run kind of slow.
And so do I need anything, like if I do shared hosting, do I need anything besides PHP and MySQL?
Nope. At one point we had a couple of Python requirements, but those are gone. So.
Okay. And you mentioned MySQL, but does it run with other databases as well?
You know, today it does not. We do use ADODB, and we have been reasonably good about it. Someone from the community, I think Remo from the community, is actually working on making sure so that we could actually use ADODB to get at any different database. So, you know, there are definitely things like that, to answer the question before, where it's like, look, here's an encapsulated problem. It's worth something to the community to have it done. That's not something that we're likely to do, and they're going to churn away on it. It's going to happen. But today, no, we are sadly not database agnostic.
Okay. And, I presume there are like Linux packages for this and all the major distributions, or do we have to always get it from sources somewhere?
There are a number of, like, there's in Bitnami. We're about to post something about Windows Azure. So there are a number of installers like that that are already built out. But I can't tell you which flavors of Unix have RPMs for them or not.
Okay, let's see. I think it's all the questions I had just for a second there. Simon, what were you in the middle of this? I know we lost you for a bit. Why don't you go ahead and ask your next question?
Yeah, my broadband modem crashed on me, unfortunately. Yeah, so I was just exploring really about your community. And so I'm interested to understand who outside your company is actively developing Concrete, because one of the key things that makes open source a good thing is knowing that if you go away, somebody else is going to carry on. That's what kept LibreOffice alive. That's what's kept MariaDB happen. It's unthinkable, of course, that you would go away. But what is your community like? Is there enough skill out there to be able to develop this without Andrew on the day that he gets hired by some proprietary company or something?
Absolutely. I mean, the community is full of developers who depend on Concrete 5 and use it every day as the heart of their business. So, if you're making a living by building stuff with this, it's obviously in your interest to understand how it works. And, if we were to drop the ball like Mambo and someone were to want to call it Cement 6 and make it GPL and run with it that way, there's no reason why they couldn't.
Right. So you know, are there any big sites that are using this that aren't your clients?
Certainly. There are big sites that we are just doing support agreements with. There are big sites that we haven't been involved with at all that that are using Concrete 5. It's and we just saw the other day by looking around at Source that the mini car site in the UK is built with Concrete 5. So, and that's, right. I mean, that's always a shocking pleasure when you realize something that you're looking at is built with software and you had no idea.
Absolutely. Well, you know, another key attribute of open source is that once you've put that spark of life into the community, you find that your business grows because it grows with the community. So having people out there who can offer support and who are deploying it is a really good thing for your small business. What is the community support like? You know, if I start using this and I don't have a support contract with you, is the community going to step in and support me well?
Yeah, absolutely. Our community is very active. If you go to concrete5.org and wander around the forums, you'll see a lot of helpful people that are jumping on threads. And, you know, we've built in a karma system at concrete5.org. So, you know, you actually get points for answering questions or marking questions as helpful. You know, those points add up and you can get things out of that. So, you know, we look for opportunities to kind of, you know, help kind of document the contributions that are coming in, because I think that's what a lot of people are looking for. It's really that that nod of, look, you know, this happened because of you. You know, thank you for your help more than anything.
Right. And it seems that it's pretty easy to skin and to redesign the UI on there. Is there a third party market in designs, skins, modules, plugins?
Yeah, that was I think that's another good example of how we've kind of tried to take a slightly different approach to serve the middle. So when we first started taking off going to open source, we realized, look, there's gonna be modules and themes and some type of add-on repository, whether we run it or not. And we decided, look, we'll build a marketplace and do it in what we think is the right way to solve some of these problems. So if you go to concrete5.org, you can install add-ons and themes. And we actually built a one-click install into your website itself. So from within your website, you can search e-commerce and find that, oh, there's an e-commerce add-on for Concrete 5, and I can buy that right here and automatically install it without ever having to know what FTP is. In order to get your work in that that repository of stuff, we kind of set the bar a little bit higher. So we came up with something called the PRB, the Peer Review Board. It's entirely run by our community. We are the final approval, but you know, there's about 30 or 40 people in there that give developers or theme designers feedback on their work and say, look, this is good, but your code's really sloppy here, or this is fine, but you don't have any documentation. You need to have something on the documentation page because people are going to ask you those questions. So there's probably about 20 automated tests that we put anything that is offered through. You know, like, are we finding eval statements in here? That's not good. And then there's probably about 20 subjective human tests that people can kind of sign off yay or nay. And you can upvote or downvote if you're in the PRB and say, look, I think the documentation sucks, and someone else say, I think it's great. And then we can come along as kind of the final folks that hit the switch and say, yeah, you know, this, you know, there's no documentation, but, you know, come on, it's a really simple add-on. It explains itself. We're going to approve it. So, you know, what we promise people who are shopping in our marketplace, whether you're getting something free, about half the stuff in there is free, half of it costs something, but it's not going to break your site. You know, if you install it, it might not make you rich, but it's not going to take your site down. It's not going to be contingent on a whole bunch of other add-ons. We always found that very frustrating that, you know, I can use this module, but only if I've installed all these other things that rethink permissions. You know, our take is kind of, look, a content management system should solve some of these generalized needs, you know, the right way is the wrong way to say it, but in a standardized way. Permissions, users, basic IO. I mean, that's what a content management system should do. So you're not going to find, you know, 10% of the modules in our marketplace rethinking permissions. If permissions aren't built right, you're going to find us saying, oh, we really need to rethink permissions. That'll happen in the next version. You know, and that kind of comes back to my, you know, my argument about Thanksgiving dinner of, look, you know, you really want that turkey to be delicious. So let's just let a couple of people worry about that. By all means, tell us that it sucks. But too many hands in that turkey is not going to be all that great. So, yeah, our marketplace is a safe and easy place to shop. If you're actually buying something from the marketplace, you're guaranteed to get support out of it. If you don't, you're going to get a refund. And, you know, and so my mom really can auto-provision a site through a one-click install on Dreamhost or something and build out her site with stuff from a marketplace and never have it just kind of fall apart because, you know, she didn't know that only this stuff works with that.
So let me make sure I get this right, all the moving parts here. So we have the core of Concrete CMS. It's free. I just download it, I install it, and life's good, and I configure it. And then if I want additional functionality, I can go to this Concrete Marketplace and look for, are there both free and paid things in there?
Yeah.
Okay, and so I might pay for something if I don't find a free thing that's equivalent to what I want. I might pay for something. Now, is your company providing some of those paid things? Is that your money source? I don't, you know, don't tell me anything you don't want me to know about, but I imagine you're doing basically consulting and for pay add-ons, right?
Yeah, we've got some add-ons that are for pay. We've got some add-ons that are free. We've got an e-commerce add-on for $125, for example. You know, our take with should something be free or not is, look, you know, do 80% or 90% of websites in the world just kind of need this or benefit from it? Then, you know, can we afford to make it free? Well, let's do that. You know, in my mind, if you're going to go sell stuff on your website, you know, you can afford to give me $100.
Yeah.
There is a free PayPal based simple e-commerce system as well. So there are alternatives. But yeah, the marketplace makes up about a third of our revenue. It's a very dependable third, which is nice. So, you know, as a consulting shop, it's always the dips and valleys that are so tedious. So the marketplace has really enabled us to be much more choosy in what we say yes to and what we say no to. We do consulting. It's an important part of what we do, but it's not strategically the most important part. We do support. So I think you see this. I mean, this is, from my experience, how open source really works well as a business model of, look, if you're a huge company and you've used Concrete 5 and, you know, now you're married to it and your public-facing website's built to it, it'd be awfully nice if you could get me or Andy out of bed at 2 a.m. if you really want to. So, you know, there are ways that you can pay a yearly retainer, basically, to have that access. And, you know, that works well for everybody.
Has the user base gotten big enough that there are other already consulting organizations that are similar to what you're doing and providing consulting and support?
I think most of the people who are using Concrete 5 are full service agencies. I don't think anyone has figured out a way to just do support on other people's work yet.
Okay.
I don't know if that'll happen or not. That's kind of tricky.
And have you? Is the user base big enough that you've had conferences on this already?
You know, we haven't done that. We keep being approached by a few folks to do it. And, you know, that's just a personal challenge I have. When we first went open source, we went to, OzCon because it was here in Portland and, sure. You know, it's right down the street. It's kind of a no brainer. I find trade shows really expensive and tiresome. So, you know, figuring out a way to do that is helpful to the people who want to go and, you know, is not a bad business play for us. It's certainly always been on our radar. We've brainstormed a lot of ideas of, you know, traveling training road shows and overnight website builds that are fun things. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to see that happen. I'd love to travel the world talking about Concrete 5, but I haven't been able to make that happen yet.
Well, you could always, just as a suggestion, you could always take the model that the Yet Another Pearl conference has taken, where you have low-cost conferences that are tied in with university settings so that you could take advantage of some of their downtime and keep the cost real low. I mean, I think the typical YAPSE fee is like $45 to the attendees, so it's a really low-cost conference. It usually has 2 or 3 days of content, so might want to look into that as possibly something if you think you have enough of a user base for it.
Yeah, that would absolutely be the way I would want to do it. Working through universities makes a lot of sense.
Cool. Let's see. We're almost out of time, so just trying to figure out if there's anything that where's Concrete heading in the future? What's still missing, and what do you want it to be?
The next big version of Concrete is going to have a whole bunch more stuff for kind of the end DIY crowd. So when we went open source, we weren't trying to make it a website builder. We weren't competing with like Wix and Homestead and that kind of stuff. We always thought there'd be some agency involved. There's people who build your home, and then it'd be really nice if you could actually change the light plate cover out yourself. What we have been pleasantly surprised about is turns out all sorts of people skip the whole expert thing and roll with it. So they'll run into Concrete 5 on their budget web host. They install it through a one-click installer. They've never even been to concrete5.org, and boom, they're good. So with 5.7, which is the next major version coming out this year, we've really sat down. We've started to, how can we rethink this so it really is compelling to more of the blogging side of things, the I just want to build something myself. So lots of cool features around that, from Facebook single sign-on to a dynamic grid of content that kind of feels Windows 8 layout-ish to more built-in functionality that we think everybody just needs. We expect that to be pretty compelling.
Oh, I have one really great question from the chat room. We have a live chat room while we're doing the show. And Ricardo Escobar says, does Concrete 5 support importing blogs and pages from WordPress and other CMSs?
Today, only kind of. You can build customized imports, and there's ways to do XML out, but there is no, hey, just point it at the WordPress blog and have it suck everything in. That is definitely on the radar with 5.7.
What about exporting? One of my observations about open source is the freedom to leave is one of the things that makes people use an open source project. How easy would it be to get off Concrete and onto a different CMS?
You can export and you get a big XML dump. What we actually architect that for is moving sites around or moving parts of sites around. Like if you get into a really large enterprise type environment, you end up with production workflow issues. So I just want to take part of the site, move it up, and import it in another part of the site. So the bones for that stuff exists. What you're going to find, and I think this is probably a problem that plagues all of CMS, whether it's open source or not, is what are you exporting to? What we track is a lot different than what Drupal or what WordPress or what others track. And I know there is a project for like a standard content management XML definition, but we haven't looked at it in a couple of years. But it's hard for me to believe that like the way we're tracking permissions would mean anything to a different system. So you can get your data out, but you're definitely going to be doing some hands-on work to put it into something else.
Right. So it's really only something for said wizards to even consider doing. Do you have any hosted services that people could use, or does everyone just host their own CMSs based on Concrete 5?
When we first started, we were very much in the, hey, if you're interested, we'll do it. And so we got into hosting for a while. And we still do dedicated hosts for larger clients, but we have extracted ourselves from the budget hosting world. Right now, we feature three major budget hosts on our hosting page. And that's actually a very nice revenue model as well. Hosting world is full of commissions. So, a lot of different places that you can host it. In the big picture with us in 5.7, we will be going down the WordPress direction of having free hosting with ads. So if you don't care, you can do that too.
Okay. Rand asked about the future of the technical future of the code. What would you say was the community future? When Acquia was in a situation rather like you with Drupal, they created the Drupal Association to run conferences, grow the market for them so they could carry on making money while the Drupal Association grew their market. What would you say was the future for your community?
As long as people can use Concrete 5 to build websites that that other people can understand, I'm happy. And as soon as that seems in jeopardy, I'm not. So I would say in the big picture, I see ourselves gradually extracting ourselves from the you know, the kind of where the wizards behind the wall position. I mean, one would think, look, as the product is really dialed in and you're not making major changes, why do you have to have a small team of creative people arguing about it? Couldn't that be more committee driven? And that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, we're already getting there with our module repository as it is. I mean, that's already run by the PRB, and we're always looking for ways to kind of extract ourselves from that process. So, you know, will we ever end up like Debian or Joomla, where every 6 months there's a new core team? I don't know. I can't see myself running that, but I don't know. We could. Definitely seems like the direction that you head is more in that way, as you said, as lieutenants come up, you know, there's less and less code contributions from Linus and more just kind of directing traffic.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, so a couple more questions. Why five? What's the five in Concrete Five?
This is the fifth major rebuild of the core from the bottom up in a way that you couldn't upgrade. One of the tremendous advantages of being closed source and just working for the clients that you have is that you don't really have to worry about 500,000 installs and how to upgrade. Mm-hmm. So in those heady days, we were able to try something out and say, yeah, that was just a bad idea and I still love you, but let's throw that away. And that's very easy when everyone's on payroll. So this was the fifth major time we had redone that. And we also realized that it's very difficult and expensive to protect a brand like the word Concrete. Since we're not Bill Gates, we couldn't just do Word. So throwing a five on the end was nice. I like odd numbers, and you know, the five looks like a backward C. So,
and unfortunately, you couldn't pick the word Portland Concrete either. That is already taken too.
Already taken. Yeah.
So just one more, a couple more quick questions, because we're almost out of time. Are you a small organization? Or are you all in Portland?
We are in Portland. There's about a dozen of us. You know, I see us getting up to 20, 30 people. My dream has always been to fill a warehouse full of creative people doing interesting stuff. Software is a good way to finance that, but it's certainly not where we the extent of what we want to do in life. So, you know, that's our goal, and we are definitely going to be continually shaving things that we don't have to do off, and you know, and finding partners to do all of the development work, and so that's where we'll be heading.
Cool. And okay, so is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
I don't know. It's been pretty good. I would urge your audience to simply give Concrete 5 a try. You can go to concrete5.org and click instant setup up top and start clicking around. And I know there's always a huge learning curve in everything, but I guarantee you that the people who you end up handing your work off to will appreciate Concrete 5.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you very much for being. But don't ask the two important questions. So what is your favorite scripting language?
Logo.
Ah, what a great answer. What a great answer. And I've actually hacked in Logo, so I know exactly what that's about. That's very cool. In fact, I did a paper for the Portland Atari Club. I did an article for the Portland Atari Club newsletter using the Atari logo to do functional programming where I wasn't actually changing the value of any variables. I would simply return back the new variables. And I had a nice little demo thing. So that was like, God, it must have been, 25, 30 years ago? Oh, my God.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's such an immediate language, you know. You can, look, I made a flower. It's awesome.
Yeah, definitely cool. And your favorite text editor?
Google Docs. Sorry.
A fair answer. I think the first time somebody's said that, so that's very nice. Not a problem. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I'm sure a lot of people now are going to go run off and go try this out and see if they can build their websites with it. Thank you very much for being on the show.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me.
Very good. Very good. Well, that was Franz Maruna and talking about Concrete. What did you think, Simon?
I thought it looked pretty cool. That Wikipedia page tells you some deep truths about CMSs. I looked at that list and there must have been, you know, 40 different CMSs just written in PHP. And this strikes me as being one of the more successful small shop CMSs I think that if you had a client who needed it, or if you had your own consulting business that you needed a CMS to make your own, it would be a good choice. As a general community choice, I'm not so sure. I think that you'd be smarter using something that had a big community behind it, like Drupal, where you could have a choice of hosts, a choice of agencies, and a choice of development skills.
Yeah, I'm not sure we actually got all the way to the compelling argument for this thing. You're right. It's sort of a – I did like his idea, his statement, though, that it was sort of midway between the two, like Drupal being on one side, being very complex and requiring heavy-duty programmers and a lot of setup time versus the tiny little WordPress blogs that would then not scale if you wanted to go beyond that. So I think in some cases – I don't know if there's anybody else that's directly in this middle space – and if they had a bigger community, I would definitely use them. But fitting that niche is really nice because it does mean you can get something up and running quickly. And you also don't get worried if, like, you know, I as a programmer want to set up something more, some complex stuff with it. And then I can't help the project out anymore. Like, let's say I set up something for a nonprofit organization and then I had to leave. It sounds like the kind of thing, though, that they could get some support for even after I left, and yet I could still get some of the fancy stuff done that I want. So, like I said, I didn't quite get to the other players that are right in this middle space. But if this works for that, and the company's still around, and there's a large user base, not necessarily a large contributor base, I could see some argument for that.
Yeah, I can't see anything particularly wrong with it. You know, it's just a matter of saying that. If I'm not a small agency looking for my own CMS to sell to my clients, probably I would be better off going to something like Joomla or Drupal.
Yes.
Simply because I've got a bigger choice of where I can get it hosted, bigger choice of where I can get skills from, and I stand a fighting chance if I fall out with my supplier of finding a different supplier.
Yeah, it is nice. If in larger marketplaces, it is nice that there's a lot of choices. I mean, it's like, you know, using Perl versus Scala. You know, it's like there's the number of people that know Perl in the world are probably about a factor of 10 or 20 times bigger than the number of people that might be able to handle Scala. So there would be some choice there.
So you're saying that Scala and Perl are of equal complexity. I see. That's an interesting observation.
Well, not to me. To me, Scala is very complex, and Perl's very simple. So I don't know. I'm a little biased there, having spent 23 years now with Perl. 25 years. Oh, yeah, Perl just turned 25 the other day. Wow, what a – I'm so old now. It's pretty crazy stuff. Anything else before we move on?
No, I think that's it. I think that it's now that I've seen it, I'll probably take a look, find out a bit more about it. It's, you know, it's interesting that it's under the MIT license rather than under one of the GPL licenses. That's pretty unusual among CMSs. It's good. There's a marketplace for modules and for skins. So you know, it's one of the stronger CMS candidates out there. It's certainly one that I'd want to evaluate if I was looking for something that was out of the mainstream.
Definitely. Well, great. So that was concrete. We've got a bunch of upcoming guests still scheduled for Q1 here. We have next week, we have Auphonic, which is an automatic audio post-production web service for broadcasters, podcasts, radio shows, screencasts, and all sorts of things. You know, this is a little bit different kind of show than we normally do. They are a shop. They are a service that uses a lot of open source software to produce a result that's both free at a certain level and commercial at another level. But they really wanted to talk about how they were able to integrate all these things and how it's actually enabled them to have a business model. So, and they do contribute back upstream to a lot of these projects as well. Following that, we have Tapper, which is a test infrastructure originally developed at AMD for their work, but now is available as open source. Media Goblin, which is a media publishing platform that anyone can run to create your own Flickr, YouTube, SoundCloud, whatever you want to do. This is also unusual in that it's a Kickstarter, I think it's a Kickstarter project from the GPL. So they're actually looking at some sort of funding to get this thing to really get sprung forward. So Tonic, which is an Erlang-based web framework and CMS. Another CMS, go figure. CakePHP, web framework, they were supposed to be on a while back. We got them rescheduled. Poodle, which is a web-based translation framework allowing me to internationalize and localize my software by allowing other people to contribute from outside. Really looking forward to the Dart language. That's Google's language that is object-oriented, very nice construct, high-level constructs, and it will run natively in Chrome,
but it'll also compile down to JavaScript to have a fallback position, which should be really, really nice, done by some very smart people over there, including a couple of the guys that have been big in the Smalltalk community as well. Pinto, which is a localized CPAN, we're going to talk about that sort of rounding up Q1. We also have a mystery guest coming up. I can't announce it yet because we haven't quite booked it all the way. So that's who we got in Q1. You can go to twit.tv/floss. There's a Google spreadsheet linked from there that talks about all our upcoming guests and all the ones I'm also trying to schedule for Q2 when I open that up. If you see someone, nope, I did that backwards again. If you have someone that you want to be interviewed by us and they're not on that list, please contact the project leader and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. That is the quickest way to get them on the list. If you just email me the name of a project, I will likely tell you the same thing in email, which is don't do that. Please go dig them up and have them contact me. It's really the only way I can manage my time on this show. If I had to keep cold calling all these projects, it would take me a long time, way more than I have time for. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+. We're also doing small postings to Floss Weekly on both Identica and Twitter. We have a live chat room, as you saw today. We took a couple questions from there. Where that's at live.twit.tv at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. Normally, every once in a while we get bumped, but that's sort of the normal time. Pacific time being West Coast U.S. time. America/Los Angeles in the big Olson database. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter and Identica. But more likely, you'll see more posts from me on Google+. That's Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. I'm sure I come up there pretty predominantly since I now have about 20,000 followers in Google+, and I really appreciate that. I really have really great dialogues with the people that I post articles for. And a lot of what I've been posting articles about is my weight loss. I am now under 180 pounds. I started at 225. I'm basically following low-carb, high-fat. And one of the cool aspects of that is I found out about coconut oil. So there is a tablespoon of coconut oil in this tea. And, oh, it's so awesome. It just tastes delicious. And so I start off with that every morning, and I don't need to have anything other than this for breakfast. And I can go all the way to mid-afternoon before I start getting hungry again, since the fat and oil in there keeps me healthy. That's all I've got to say for now. Simon, what do you want to pimp today?
Well, that coconut oil is a great stuff. We cook with that. What I love about it is the way that it's solid at room temperature and mystically turns to oil in the spoon as you stir it into the coffee.
Absolutely.
So, if you would like to follow the stuff that I'm writing or speaking about, the best way to do that is to go to webmink.com. That's my personal website. And from there, you'll find aggregated the stuff that I'm doing on InfoWorld, where I have a column every Friday, and Computer World UK, and other places who are taking my writings and passing them to their audiences. Upcoming events, I'm speaking at FOSDEM in Brussels, which is the weekend of the 2nd and 3rd of February. If you live anywhere in Northern Europe, you really should consider coming to FOSDEM. It's going to be an excellent event this year. Amongst the keynotes, they have Amelia Anders' daughter, who is a European politician, who is on the US government's list of people of interest around WikiLeaks. She'll be speaking and delivering a keynote at that conference. Somebody else in that situation is Jacob Applebaum, and he will also be speaking there. Somebody who I don't think is of material interest to the FBI, but is speaking at the conference is Eben Moglen, who was the one of the authors of the GPLv3 license. And you'll find pretty much every open source project that is of any importance whatsoever is represented there, has the core developers meeting for a dev room. You'll find that there is a lot of beer around because it is in Brussels. And I strongly encourage you to come along and give it a try. That's in Brussels, the 2nd and 3rd of February. It is completely gratis. There is no charge whatsoever to get in. The event just happens and you show up and join in and get involved in open source projects of all shapes, sizes and colors. That's pretty much all that I had to pimp this week. I do need to go and add some coconut oil to my coffee.
Real good, real good. Well, I tell you, this is the way I'm starting every morning. And so it's a friend of mine was doing what they call bulletproof coffee, where he actually takes a half a stick of unsalted butter from grass-fed
cows. And he would take a half a stick of that and melt it into his coffee every morning. And that's actually how I found out about all this stuff. So I said, that's got to be crazy. It's got to be anti-heart stuff. But no, it's actually very heart healthy, all this stuff, because you got really good unoxidized omega-6 and good omega-3s. And so check into that stuff. Low-carb, high-fat, or similar as paleo, but there's only like a strong amount of overlap between the two communities. So there's differences in each side. I'm more of the low-carb, high-fat community. So anyway, enough on that. I guess we're all done. So thank you, Simon, once again for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Actually, I do have one more pimp that I'm going to do. Is that the book about developing open source software is, it's called Developing Open Source Software. It's written by Carl Fogel, who is an excellent mentor and open source project consultant. And his book is so old that it was written before GitHub existed. And he is running a Kickstart project to fund the writing of Edition 2. I encourage everybody who is listening or watching the show this week to go over to Kickstarter and contribute to Carl Fogel's Kickstarter campaign so we get a new edition of developing open source software that takes in GitHub, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and all of the other developments that have happened in the last 7 years. Do please give that a try. It's a very deserving cause.
Simon, how would they figure out where to find that? So you go to Kickstarter, and what do you type in the search?
You're going to go to Kickstarter and go search for Carl's name. His surname is Fogel. That's F-O-G-E-L. And
that's,
I'll make
Carl
sure
with
that
a
I...
K. Carl with a K.
That's Carl with a K, F-O-G-E-L, and go support his Kickstarter campaign on Kickstarter.com.
Very worthy. Thank you, Simon, for bringing that up, and thank you for being on the show, and we'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.